Although the human form of life is the rarest opportunity for attaining spiritual perfection, I am now lamenting bitterly. This is because somehow or other I have been born with such an opportunity, but have simply wasted it by never worshipping Lord Krishna. Oh, to whom shall I tell the tale of my misery? Having married and entered the entanglements of materialistic family life, I passed my time in vain. I never got any tangible gain or permanent benefit, but only trouble and botheration. What kind of world is this? It seems to be just like a magic lantern show, wherein so many shadows and optical illusions dance magically before my eyes. I feel great attachment and identification with such a world, and thus day after day passes without any purpose whatsoever. When this body drops dead on the ground, what will then remain mine? At that moment, all my sons and dearest loved ones will not be able to give me any happiness. I work hard, just like an ass every day, and now I am wondering, for whom am I working so hard? I am still surrounded by so many illusions. I waste every day in useless, insignificant work, and I waste every night controlled by sleep. And in every 24 hours, I never consider that cruel death is always sitting right in front of me. I imagine that I live a very carefree lifestyle, sometimes eating a lot or eating a little if I feel like it. Sometimes I see things around the town, or sometimes I do not go out at all. Sometimes I wear opulent clothing, or if I am in the mood, I'll wear something simple. I live so carefree, and I never consider that one day I will have to give up this body. But in actuality, my poor heart is plagued by constant anxieties regarding the maintenance of my body, my house, my wife, my family members, and my social obligations. All these anxieties are pinching me sharply and truly destroying my intelligence. Alas, alas, what a remorseful situation has arisen. I am engrossed with all this trouble, but I never consider that all these things are temporary and subject to perish very soon. After I'm dead and gone, what will remain of all my material opulences? When my body is thrown into the pit of the cremation grounds, it will simply lie there motionless. Then many crows, vultures, ants, and worms will come and playfully sport there. All the stray dogs and jackals will become very much delighted, and in great ecstasy, they will make a festival ground out of my body and have a huge feast. Just see, such is the ultimate destination of this material body. And the most amazing thing is that all material opulences, my house, family, and friends, have exactly the same destination. Therefore, I advise those who have keen intelligence, please give up all these temporary illusions presented by Maya and search after the means to get pure devotion to Lord Krishna, for this is the only eternal truth. This very deep, spiritually enlightening prayer was composed by Srila Thakur Bhaktivinod. Such a great Vaishnava Acharya, is not only revealing the inconceivable humility of his own heart, but teaching all the conditioned souls in the world. You are creating a very great disturbance by sitting there. Jayadvaita Maharaj ki
jai.
Durlabha manava janma. This human birth is truly rare. The scriptures tell us that the greatest loss in all of the creation is when one finally attains the human birth after evolving through millions of lower species and wasting a moment without remembering Krishna. That is the greatest loss. To lose all our money, to lose our health, to lose our loved ones, to lose our position and prestige, to lose our life and die. In terms of reality, which is eternal, these are not great losses. In the millions of species of life that you have had previously, how many of your lost loved ones are you grieving over now? And what about all the money or your nice places of residences that you've given up in your previous lives? They are utterly irrelevant to you now. Nashato vidite bhavo na bhavo vidite shata ubhayor ipitristontas tvaniyostatutarashidhi. Gita tells us that those who see the truth understand that what never perishes, the eternal, that is reality. And that which is temporary is unreal. Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses the example of the optical illusions that dance before the eyes when one sees a magic lantern show. When the flames are coming through the glass and it is shining on the wall, it appears like a reality. But actually, those images on the wall, they are real for a second only, and then they perish. But people are very much addicted to illusion. And as Kali Yuga progresses, people become more and more attached to illusions. Bombay is called Bollywood because of the cinemas. But now it's not Bombay, it's Mumbai, so I guess it will be called Mollywood. So, when you go into the theater, as His Holiness Suhotra Maharaj explained, in order to enjoy it, first they have to turn out all the lights. It has to be completely dark. You have to be in total darkness of ignorance to enjoy the cinema. Because if it's light, you won't see anything. Similarly, if you're enlightened, you will not be the slightest bit interested or affected by anything of this world, except all the foolish people who are sitting around trying to enjoy it. But in that darkness, there's just light that's portraying on the screen. And we identify with that light. First of all, usually the story is untrue.
And even if there is some so-called truth in the distance, by the time the producers make it palatable and attractive to the audience, it's not true anymore.
And what are you seeing? You're just seeing some light passing through some film onto the wall. And yet we're thinking, this is a beautiful woman. This is a handsome man. This is a terrible war. This is a horrible monster. We're fearful. We're crying and weeping in sorrow. We're elated. We're laughing like anything. And what's happening? We become so totally absorbed in the story that we're willing to pay our hard-earned money that we've worked foaming at the mouth like an ass just to see it again and again and again. It's just light on a screen. And television, again, it's just light beams on a piece of glass. But we identify it as the highest reality of our life. It distracts us away from what reality really is. That is Maya. What the cinema or the television is, it's real. It's light on the screen. But when Prabhupada defines Maya as that which is not, it is not what we think it is. It exists, but it is not what we think it is. This body exists, but it is Maya. It is an illusion because it is not you, but you think it is you. Wife, children, relatives, friends. It's Maya. It's an illusion. They exist. It's a spirit soul in a temporary body. But you're thinking this is mine because it is related to my body. Janasya mohoya mahamameti. This is the root cause of all suffering in this world. Thinking I am this body and thinking those things related to the body are mine. And in pursuance of the joys of this body, moment after moment after moment is being stolen away from us. Atato brahma jigyasa. Human life is specifically meant for self-realization. It is the junction where we can depart from the path of illusion and enter onto the freeway of truth. The aquatics, the vegetation, insects, reptiles, birds, beasts, they are all trying to enjoy under the illusion that they are these bodies. Why are there so many animals, so many fish, so many insects? Because maitunya agara. Because the ultimate pleasure in creation is sex desire. Therefore, they are simply mating and eating and getting some sleep and defending anything or anyone that is interfering with their safety or their pleasures in life. That is animal civilization. When Srila Prabhupada came to New Vrindavan in 1976, he was telling that the dogs run on four legs and you are running on four wheels. What is the difference? The difference is you had to work so hard for your car and the dog didn't do anything. He's just running. He doesn't have to pay insurance. I'm elaborating on what Prabhupada said. He doesn't have to go through paying the bank bills for the loan of the car. He practically never crashes into other cars.
He's just running, carefree. For what? For some sense gratification, to facilitate his desire to enjoy. And we are running on our four wheels for the same purpose, to maintain our lives somehow or other and enjoy. And Prabhupada said, the dog is sleeping in the street, and you are sleeping in a very nice house with beautiful bed. But what is the mentality? When you're asleep, you're asleep. The dog forgets he's a dog, and you forget you're a Brahmin living in Bombay. You forget you're a man, you forget you're a woman, you forget you're a human being. You're blank, you're nothing. The dog may dream that he's human, and you may dream that you're a dog. What is the difference? They're identical. And the dog is having sex in the street with any she-dog that happens to come by. And having children. And having family. And protecting the family. And we're doing the same thing in a very sophisticated way. And the dog is defending with his teeth and his claws. And we're defending by so many security systems in our household to keep people from coming in. So many locks and alarms. And collectively we're building nuclear bombs and all kinds of weapons and armies. But the mentality is the same. The desire to enjoy and protect oneself is animal consciousness. Human life begins when we inquire into who we are. What is our purpose of life? Who is God and what is our relationship? Only the human being can do this. In San Francisco, in 1967, Srila Prabhupada opened a center on Frederick Street in the Haight-Ashbury district of San Francisco. And many young people were coming. But people in the Western world are often very much attached to their dogs. Because usually the dog is the only one everyone in the family unanimously gets along with. Seriously, everyone's fighting. Everyone's fighting like cats and dogs, except with the dog. The dog's neutral. You punch your brother and kiss your dog. That's American culture. You make your sister scream by doing some, pulling her hair, and then you kiss your dog and pet him and say, nice, nice, nice. So they had dogs, and Srila Prabhupada, he did something that was a tremendous culture shock for Americans. He told them, dogs are not allowed in the temple. What? What kind of discrimination is this? So they had a little pole outside where people could tie their dogs to on the leash when coming in. And people, this was the philosophical questions that sometimes they would ask. Swamiji, why my dog is not allowed in the temple? And Prabhupada said, because only humans can understand philosophy. Dogs cannot understand philosophy. Give them prasad, they'll be delivered. But this temple is meant to chant the Lord's name and to hear philosophy. So human life is so very, very rare. If we could only capture the essence of what Thakur Bhakti Vinod is singing in this song, how rare is this human birth? And how rare and precious every moment of human birth is. Intelligence will be calculated by how a human being utilizes each precious moment of life. Some of you may be young, but that youth is like a fleeting illusion. Those of you who are older, you see the young people and you remember when you were young, and what those 50 years between 70 and 20, they seem to have passed in a moment. As they say, time flies. And as you're going older, time flies faster and faster and faster. Komara acharet pragyo dharman bhagavataniha. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj said, now you're a young boy, 5 years old. This is the time. Don't wait. It may be too late. Death could come at any moment. And as each moment passes and we're engaged in materialistic activities, we are further complicating and incriminating ourselves in conditioned state of consciousness. Every time you enjoy something, on a subtle platform, there comes a deep attachment and conditioning to that enjoyment. If we think, let me become serious about spiritual life when I'm older, by the time you get older, your mind is just endlessly filled with obsessive attachments due to all the enjoyments that you tried to enjoy when you were young and through your life. Is that intelligence? It's like putting infectious disease dirt all over your body, thinking, when I get older, I'll take a bath. Is that intelligent? You may never make it to the bathtub. That is the way of the world. Therefore, durlabhamanavajanma lobhya samsari. We've been evolving through the cycle of birth and death endlessly. Now, by the grace of Krishna, we have this rare human birth. And what is the rarest thing in the human existence? To have the association of devotees. Each and every one of us in this assembly knows what the goal of life is. We have heard it. We have a little faith. But still, Maya is trying to drag our intelligence away and again engage it in her service. There are so many sufferings, endless sufferings. That is what material nature is. The root cause of all suffering is that we have forgotten our constitutional nature. That we are the Jivatma. We are part and parcel of Krishna. We are His eternal servants. Our happiness is to serve. Our downfall is to try to enjoy apart from Krishna. And yet the whole world is trying to enjoy apart from Krishna. In the spiritual world, everyone is living eternally in the highest state of transcendental ecstasy. Because everyone is absorbed in pleasing Krishna, the supreme reservoir of all pleasure, the ultimate object of everyone's love, the most beautiful person whose love and compassion is the ultimate aspiration of every soul's desires. It is that Krishna who comes to this world, millennium after millennium, to reveal His divine form to us, to perform His pastimes for us to see, to speak Bhagavad Gita, instruct us, what is the reality of our present conditioned state?
how to get out of that miserable situation and how to know Him, love Him, and be happy. It is that most merciful Krishna who personally descends to this world to attract the hearts of those who have rejected Him, rebelled against Him, blasphemed Him in so many ways, birth after birth after birth. And He sends His own personal associates from the spiritual world to canvass on His behalf. This is real happiness. Come back home, back to Godhead. Lord Sri Krishna is so merciful. He is Patita Pavana. And the ultimate expression of His being the deliverer of the fallen souls manifests in the age of Kali. Kali Yuga is a time where quarrel, hypocrisy, bitter envy, hatred, and war is imminent everywhere at all times. Whereas civilizations become more and more materially advanced, they become more sinful, more degraded. The first world countries' divorce rates are 70%. The second and third world countries still honor the sacred sacrament of marriage. Very backward. Where alcoholism, drug addiction, massive crime, fear, artificial economy that could collapse at any second. Everyone looks toward America. But when was it? In the 1920s, the Great Depression? It was a wealthy country. And one day, nobody expected it. Somehow or other, some chain reaction of insecurity came into the country and the stock market collapsed totally. And it was a country of utter poverty. That just happened a few years ago. And the greatest fear of the economists in America is at any second it could happen again. Where is the security in this world? But Maya gives us the illusion that there is security. Because we are addicted to the tangible objects that our senses can perceive, thinking that that is reality. But the soul cannot be seen, cannot be touched, cannot be tasted or heard. The soul can only be perceived through the spiritual vision, although the soul is the one who sees. When the soul looks through the eyes into a mundane mirror, it only sees the body. It cannot see itself. All we see is the things of this world. Therefore, we are thinking security is money, security is nice homes, security is good friends and obedient family members. But Krishna is canvassing with His devotees that real security is in faith. If you want to actually take to real spiritual life, there must be faith. Because you are taking a step into what cannot be perceived by material mind and senses. Some people say, if there is a God, show me God. This is the challenge of the atheists. There was one famous atheist in the West. He used to travel town to town, village to village. Just like Lord Chaitanya wanted us to travel town to town, village to village, chanting His name. This man would go town to town, village to village. He was the most famous, successful atheist. And he was converting thousands of people.
And he would give the same pravachan, same lecture. He would just stand and start screaming, God, you do not exist. If you exist, strike me dead right now. I challenge you, God. Every gentleman will accept a challenge. I challenge you. If you are there, strike me dead now. Kill me. Come, God. He'd do that for about a half hour. Then he'd look around to the thousands of people assembled around him and say, see, I'm still alive. That is the evidence there is no God. If you are a God, show yourself to me. But should I tell you something? That man today is dead. God killed him. But not according to this man's demand, according to God's own sweet will. Why does he have to lower his ultimate position to fulfill the demands of some atheist? He's dead. The people say, if there is a God, show me. If I can't see him, I don't believe. But the scriptures tell us, premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena. If you want to see God, your eyes have to be anointed with love, with devotion. Then you can see God as he is. But until that purified state, we have to be philosophically and intelligently convinced. We have to see through the eyes of the scriptures. A devotee sees God in everything due to his faith. He sees the world completely different than everyone else. A devotee sees everything as the property of Krishna. Everything as something very, very sacred to be utilized for the pleasure of Krishna. Therefore, he sees Krishna everywhere. For one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, for him I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. If we're looking for Krishna, we'll see Krishna directly or indirectly. One time a devotee asked Prabhupada, how do we see Krishna everywhere? In a purified state, you may see him playing his flute and dancing for you. In a conditioned state, how? Prabhupada showed his spectacles. He said, when you see these spectacles, what do you think? The devotee said, I think these are Srila Prabhupada's spectacles. He said, same thing. When you understand philosophically that everything belongs to Krishna, then everything you will see that this is Krishna's energy. This is Krishna's property. This is meant for Krishna's pleasure. And you will utilize everything according to that vision. That is how you see God everywhere, in everything, and in everyone. The great acharyas, like Narada Muni, he saw Mugrari the hunter torturing and killing animals slowly. What an abominable situation. But yet, he saw that within this cruel hunter's heart is a pure servant of Krishna. Let him be enlightened. And Narada Muni preached to him and extracted the essence of Mugrari's true existence, which was pure unalloyed love for Krishna. But in the conditioned state of consciousness, there is what is called a leap of faith. We are standing on the illusory securities of this material existence, which appear very tangible because they're temporary. They're not really tangible, but they appear to be now. And we have to take a step into something that materially is invisible. His Holiness Jayadvaita Maharaj is a sannyasi. That means he has given up the ultimate pleasures for materialists. He's given up the pleasure of sex. He's given up the pleasure of having a family, having his own children, having property, home, having his own cars, having insurance policies. He's given up all these things that are so dear and sacred to everyone on this planet. At the beginning stages of his spiritual life, why? Because he heard from Prabhupada that there is Krishna and he is the supreme goal. And by surrendering to him, you will achieve his divine love and his ultimate abode. So willing to give up all the so-called securities and stabilities of material life for something that cannot be seen. And persevering for 30 some years in this life. How is that? Why? Because when you have faith, then the object of your faith becomes billions of times a greater, deeper, more tangible reality than the flickering magic lantern shows of this world. But in order to realize that, there has to be that leap. There has to be that willingness to live by what we have heard. To see through the eyes of the scriptures, to see through the eyes of the words of the great souls. Because Srila Prabhupada is seeing Krishna. We want to see through his eyes. His words are giving us the vision by which we can see Krishna. On our own, all we see is this world. Srila Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj taught how to see Krishna. It's a very profound art. He said, don't try to see Krishna. The atheists are challenging, show me God, I want to see God. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati is getting his devotees to give up everything of material enjoyment to pursue God and is saying, don't try to see God. Try to serve Krishna in such a way that he wants to see you. Deity worship is a very important sacred aspect on the path of bhakti. Some people say that if God is everywhere, why do you have to go in the temple to see God? Because you cannot see him everywhere. You're not pure. But God agrees by his causeless mercy to appear with his eternal consort in the temple. And the greatest, most self-realized acharyas dedicated their lives in serving the Archavigraha. It's not just for neophytes. It's for all Vaishnavas. Rupa Goswami is our Sampradaya acharya. Shri Radha Govinda, Radha Govinda, Radhe, Rupa Goswami Prandana He. Shri Govinda Dev and Shri Radharani, those deities are his life and soul. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, God himself in the mood of the supreme devotee, how he worshipped Lord Jagannath in Puri. During the time of the Anavasara, after the Snan Yatra, Lord Jagannath goes into seclusion for about 2 weeks. It is called a Navayovanam, where he gets repainted and all of that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could not bear being in Puri without seeing Jagannath. He would go to Alalanath. And there he would lay on a piece of rock, and in separation from Lord Jagannath, the rock melted. And to this very day, you can see the imprint of the Lord's body. And what you're seeing is his ecstatic love in very tangible form.
And then there's that very sacred festival, Netrotsava, where Jagannath gives his first darshan just before Rath Yatra in the temple. Netrotsava because it is feast for the eyes. Generally, Lord Chaitanya, due to his humility, would stand behind the Garuda Stamba. Now, due to obvious reasons, we're not allowed in Jagannath Temple. But tell me, how far back is Garuda Stamba from the deities? Huh? Quite far. Very exact. Between it is the Jagamohan, the Kirtan Hall. And how many thousands of people are between Garuda Stamba and the deities? That's the way it is described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. There can be thousands of people between. And he would stand behind due to his humility. And one time that Aurean woman was climbing. She was an old woman. She was so eager to see Lord Jagannath. She climbed right on top of Lord Chaitanya's body with her feet on his shoulder. She was leaning on the Garuda Stamba, seeing Lord Jagannath with tears in her eyes. Govinda, Mahaprabhu's servant, he said, you know, you get down. This is a sannyasi. You should not climb on his body and put your feet on him. So she bowed down off. She didn't know what she was doing. She begged forgiveness. And Lord Chaitanya chastised Govinda. You uncivilized man, you adivas. Why did you do that? She was in ecstasy seeing Lord Jagannath. She was in such ecstasy. She was so eager to see Lord Jagannath that she didn't even consider anything of this material world. He started praying to Lord Jagannath that please give me the enthusiasm and eagerness that this woman has to see you. That will be my perfection. This is Mahaprabhu, the greatest sannyasi. He already defeated Prakashananda Saraswati. He already converted Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the greatest scholars in the world. He had already transformed even the most cultured South Indian Vaishnavas into worshippers of Krishna, Gaudiyas. What he had done. But yet, he's praying to Lord Jagannath, let me have the bhav of this old, unknown lady. Let me have her eagerness. I don't even have a trace of it. That is great Vaishnava. But on this particular day of the Netrotsava, due to separation for 15 days, Lord Chaitanya went right into the altar room and stood just inches away from Lord Jagannath, along with his devotees. And they stood there all day. Their eyes did not even blink. The only movement in the body was the tears flowing. They were not seeing a piece of wood. They were seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. They were seeing Lord Jagannath in a threefold bending form playing his flute, glancing upon them with his beautiful lotus-like eyes. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to give us that vision. How? Don't try to see Krishna. Try to be such a devoted servant of the servant of the servant that Krishna wants to see you. Because you cannot see Krishna in truth until he reveals himself to you. You cannot see Krishna with your eyes. You can see Krishna when he reveals himself by his own sweet will. And he will reveal himself in relation to your devotion. How much you want to serve him, how much you want to serve his devotees, how much dedicated you are, how much you're willing to fight against the onslaughts of Maya at every moment. By
by taking serious, deep responsibility in our sadhana, in our lifestyle, and in the service of Guru and Gauranga. Because that responsible desire to serve occupies our mind and keeps it fixed on Krishna. If you do your service without a sense of responsibility, then your mind is not really engaged. But if you accept responsibility for what you're doing, whether it's cleaning the floor or managing an empire of Vaishnavas, that sense of responsibility gives a dedication and a commitment to what you're doing, and it occupies your mind. And when the mind runs away by the powers of Maya, we drag it back because we know we have to do what Krishna wants under all circumstances. To the degree we're committed, to that degree we're protected from Maya. Yega tamam prapadyante tam sthitaiva bhajamyaham. As you approach Krishna, Krishna will reward you accordingly. When Krishna reveals himself to us, then there is netrotsava. Then there is feast for the eyes. So when we come before Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, we should be thinking that what we are seeing is seeing. What is seen by us is seeing us. And what's important is not how we're seeing them, but how they're seeing me. That's actually how we should approach the deity. That we're presenting ourselves before the Supreme Personality of Godhead for His satisfaction. And what does He see? He doesn't only see what kind of clothes we're wearing. He sees what is our ambitions, what is our aspirations in life and how we are pursuing it. The devotees who had personal association with Prabhupada often say that when he looked at us, he was seeing right through me. When I first met Srila Prabhupada at Cross Maidan here in Bombay in 1971, beginning of March, I was traveling around to so many places, meeting so many holy men, trying to understand what is God, what is true religion, reading so many books. And Prabhupada just looked right into my eyes when I came on the stage. Just looked, and like so many of my God brothers and God sisters, he just looked right through me. He wasn't seeing my face. He wasn't seeing my long matted hair. He wasn't seeing my river-stained sadhu clothes. He wasn't seeing the little branch that I was holding as a stick. He was seeing my mind, my intelligence, and my soul. And I could hear him speaking through his glance. That was my first impression. He said, "Give up all this nonsense and surrender." He said it without moving his mouth. I felt that. And I was, how could he be saying like this to me? Give up your nonsense and surrender. I heard a voice in my heart through his glance. Because he's Krishna's representative. When we come before the deity, Krishna is personally there, seeing, hearing, tasting, feeling, looking right into our soul. If we're committing aparads, if we're cheating, he sees us and he knows. And that's what we're presenting before him. But despite all our faults and our disqualifications and our weaknesses, if we're honestly trying to be humble and sincere in a spirit of serving him and pleasing him, he will be pleased, very, very pleased. And the glance of the deity will purify our heart when he's pleased with us.
When you come before the deity of Krishna, if he's pleased, that glance, how much it purifies your soul. This should be how we approach the Lord. And that requires faith. Such faith is only possible when we associate with those people who have faith. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught us, sadhu sangha sarva sastra koi, lava matra sadhu sangha sarva siddhi koi. Association with devotees is so important. Even a moment's association can transform a person's life. Asat sangatyaga avaishnavachar. By associating with faithful devotees, we develop faith. By associating with materialistic people, Maya, through them, steals away our faith. By speaking those things that provoke faith, Krishna will bestow faith on us. By speaking nonsense, mundane gossip, Maya will steal away what faith is there. If you plant a tree, you know it takes years and years and years for that tree to grow up and start giving fruit. You water it, you protect it. It may take so many years to grow it, but it only takes a few seconds to cut it down. Faith is like that. Therefore, the association of devotees is so very, very essential for every aspiring devotee. And thus, it is such an important service when devotees come together to create an environment where people can have faith. But that is only possible if each and every individual within the congregation takes personal responsibility to act in a way, to serve in a way that we can generate faith amongst others. Not do things that will disturb people's faith, that will rob people of their faith. We should be an agent of Krishna, not an agent of Maya. And a wonderful congregation that creates Vaikuntha atmosphere is depending on individuals who take that serious, responsible commitment to act in such a way to generate and increase other people's faith. By being eager to hear about Krishna, by being eager to speak about Krishna, by being very pure in our habits, by acting according to proper Vaishnava etiquette, sadachar. By cultivating humility. By putting aside our false egos, which is the very root of all of our separate interests, our materialistic, independent nature. In materialistic advanced civilization, the more independent you are, the more you're considered a very, very glorious, successful person. I'm independent. I made it on my own. I do what I want, when I want. But in spiritual life, we are striving to become completely dependent on the mercy of Krishna, Guru, and Vaishnavas. We utilize our independence to cultivate dependence. That is the true use of independence. When devotees come together to increase each other's faith, we have the spiritual world in this world. And most of all, by enthusiastically chanting our japa and enthusiastically participating in Sankirtan, we are generating very deep faith in people's hearts in the process of the congregational chanting of the holy names. When an ordinary person who has some sukriti, some piety in their hearts, when they see devotees united with love and affection for each other, dancing sweetly and chanting the holy names loudly, just that sight floods their heart with faith. That is preaching. In the early days, Srila Prabhupada gave devotees faith in the holy name and sent those devotees out into the streets of the western cities to chant. And that's how most people became devotees. I know one devotee who used to beat up devotees before he was a devotee. He thought these people are crazy. Another person used to throw stones at devotees when he'd see them on Harinam Sankirtan. But even though he and his friends were throwing stones at them and beating them up, the devotees would just forgive them and go on chanting. So these people were thinking, these people have faith in what they're doing. And they became devotees. They gained faith by seeing the faith of others. This is the power of the chanting of the holy name in congregation. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. If we take it very seriously, the spirit of humble, sincere, submissive servitude and taking committed responsibility to perform our sadhana, then Krishna will be pleased. Krishna will reveal himself to us. Ashlisyava padratam panashtu mama darshanam mamahatam karotuba. But we have to have faith. We have to develop and cultivate that faith. Because he may not reveal himself now. According to his sweet will. And that's the only way we want it. If we're servants of Krishna, we're not telling Krishna, I want to see you now. Or Krishna, I'm your servant. Mukunda Dutt, he was blissfully grateful to wait 10 million births for the opportunity to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was willing to spend that entire 10 million births exclusively serving him and chanting his holy name. A servant does not demand from the master. That is why we have impatience. Because we have our expectations of what Krishna should do for us. But one of the symptoms of surrender is patience. Yeah, Krishna, I am your servant. You can embrace me, you can trample on me, or you can make me brokenhearted by not being present before me. But I will serve you unconditionally. I have no other master than you. This is the glorious message that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given. In the age of Kali, Krishna descends in his most merciful form. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam explains that the great sages and rishis worship Kali Yuga as the best of all ages. Because although it is the time of the greatest fever of material disease, it is the time when the Lord appears in his most merciful form. the form of his own beloved Srimati Radharani to distribute her love to the world through the chanting of the holy name. Therefore, Narottam Das Thakur prays, when will my eyes be filled with tears and my voice choked up upon reciting the name Gauranga? When will I feel transcendental ecstasy? Not for myself, but for the pleasure of the Lord when I chant the names Hari Hari. These great acharyas are teaching us how to long for truth, how to absorb our mind in begging Krishna for service, for begging Krishna for love, for his pleasure. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come, and Srila Prabhupada has delivered him, his mercy in full. Therefore, let us pray for his mercy. We now request His Holiness Jayadvaita Maharaj to illuminate our hearts with his divine words.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama,
Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
The microphone was not on, no one heard what you said.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Ram,
Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
What it takes me all my life to try to say, he can say in
three words.
Give that message and millions of times more in one mantra. That is the power of a true Vaishnava.
And then, in a few million births, I might be able to chant with fewer offenses. That's the art.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung the same thing.
It's like, what can you say? There's some... It's just like a man on the street is whistling and Beethoven is whistling.
Huh?
A man on the street is whistling and Beethoven is whistling. Or some great composer is... Or like the donkey is reciting poetry and Rabindranath Tagore is reciting poetry. There's a difference.
But if I associate with you long enough, maybe I will become like Beethoven.
Probably become a carny. But it won't happen to you, don't worry.
Maybe I will become purified. His Holiness Jayadvaita Maharaj Ki.
Holiness Radhanath Maharaj Ki.